Chapter 2. Adamantua. In less than 6 solar hours, they were back in combat. A filthy dusk had settled over the landscape. In the reddish haze of the sky, the low-anchored bulks of their barges hung like oblong, tusk-proud moons. The chapter master had ordered over 90% of the fist strength out on this undertaking. It was a huge show of force. Too much, in Slaughter's opinion. But it was political, too. The Adeptus Astartes were very good at prosecuting and finishing wars. Whenever extended periods of peace broke out, especially in the exalted systems and holdings around the Terran core, it became harder to justify the sheer might of a standing army like the Imperial Fists. It was good to get them out, to give them purpose, to chalk up a staggering victory that the core system populations could celebrate. The extermination of a Xenos-breed threat like the Chromes was ample justification for such lethal institutions as the Imperial Fists. Strategic surveys put the Chrome numbers at something in the order of 88 billion, and migratory scans showed a pronounced incurved diaspora towards the core worlds. Besides, Adamantua, throne-forsaken Adamantua, was just 6 warp weeks from solar approach. Since the very earliest ages of the Imperium, the Imperial Fists had been the primary defenders of Terra. Other chapters, legions as they had been known until the Great Heresy and the instigation of the Codex, might crusade, explore, or take war to the furthest corners of Imperial space. But the Imperial Fists were the primary guardians of Terra and the Core. This was what they had always done. This was the duty their beloved Primarch progenitor had charged them with when he had left them. It was their legacy. Surface scans had shown another Chrome family group of significant size moving around the blister nest. Daylight Wall had led the way across the river, with 2 walls at their heels and another crossing further up. The river was broad but slow and heavy, no more than waist deep and muddy. The brackish water fumed with insects. The Chromes started to resist when they saw the Imperial Fists wading out to the nest side. Some plunged into the water and attempted to attack. Shooting began, brothers firing from the soupy water, pushing the foe back, driving the Chromes up the claggy banks, even as the Xenos gathered in greater numbers to plunge in. The enemy became agitated. The slow tide was soon full of Chrome corpses spinning end to end as they drifted downstream. The Imperial Fists' advance seemed almost sullen. They came slowly, trudging through the stinking water, firing because they had to, at targets too ridiculously easy to hit. Slaughter roused his men. If they were going to engage, they were going to do it with dignity. They were coming up the bank, approaching the huge, septic shape of the blister nest rim.
"Daylight Wall stands forever," he voxed. "No wall stands against it. Bring them down."
The men of the company clashed their bolt guns and their broadswords against their combat shields and chanted the refrain back. The advance began to accelerate. A wall of men. A wall of supermen. Slaughter reached the bank. It was a steep, slick mire threaded with coarse vegetation. Glinting in the smoky light, Chromes bounded down onto the ridges, rising up into threat postures and challenging him. He came out of the water, oily green moisture trailing off his yellow armor. Frenzy was at his left hand, Heartshot was at his right. The first of the Chromes came at him. Slaughter's broadsword was a 2-handed power blade with a silver cross hilt and a black pummel. It had fought at Terra during the siege, in the hands of a fist called Emetris, who had fallen there. It was as broad as a standard human male's thigh. He brought it up, and it described an arc in the air as the first Chrome leapt. It split the Xenos through its gleaming bio-armor and cut it in 2. Ichor showered in all directions. A second sprang, and he smashed it aside, slashed open. A third met the blade, impaled itself, and thrashed wildly until he ripped the sword back out. It was just the beginning. They started to rush. A dozen, 2 dozen all at once. Slaughter liked sword work. It was economical. It saved munitions for more significant moments. The broadsword was a finely balanced instrument in his huge hands. The two-handed grip could turn and shear each swing in a surprisingly subtle number of ways. Slaughter began to slaughter. He left a trail of dead behind him, ruptured silver husks weeping ichor into the matted, trampled vegetation. Each step was an impact as another two or three chromes came at him and were met by the brute, full-stop force of his blade. Organic debris flew from each killstroke. Ichor and other Xenos fluids squirted high into the air and dappled his armor like dew, like rain. Frenzy tore through the stand of dry weeds to his left, swinging an axe that had been the proud possession of a series of fists since before the Great Crusade. The curve of its bite had been notched by the skull of a green war boss during the Malavargil compliance. Frenzy, a big-hearted, generous man, possessed particularly acute hand-eye coordination. His movements were so fast and precise, they seemed almost random. He had earned his wall name through his grace on the field, the constant motion, the changing grips, the reversals, the backsteps, the aggression. His axe moved from grip to grip like a baton or a staff, whirled by some ceremonial parade ground officer. It seemed to fly from his hand many times as he turned and changed position, but it never left him. Like Slaughter, he had eschewed his bolter for the clearance work. Slaughter wished he could stop and admire the battlecraft of his friend and brother, but there was no opportunity. The enemy's numbers were increasing. To Slaughter's right, tearing through the reed beds and the dried mucus walls of the blister nest edges, came Heartshot and Chokehold. Heartshot's rotary cannon made a metallic din like a stamp press forge at full production. Chokehold's bolter exploded two or sometimes three charging chromes with each shell. Slaughter barked orders, kept the line firm. He didn't want overstep. He didn't want the chromes to find a way in through any gap in their line. Heartshot and Chokehold moved ahead fast, cutting their path with firepower. He had to keep them leashed. He called out wall names: Cleaver, Arm's Length, Cold Eye, Life Taker, Bleed Out, and urged them in at the back, ordering them through the reed beds to fill and cover. His head snapped around from a sideways blow. He smelled blood in his nose, blood that clotted instantly. A screamer alert sang in his helm, and his visor display blinked up mottled damage patterns. He recovered. This took less than a second. One of the big adults had raked his head with a forelimb claw. He'd taken his eye off the fight for a micro moment to check the line. His sword killed the thing for its insult and for the scratch it left in the yellow surface of his helm. But there was another at its heels, an even bigger adult. It was two-thirds his size. He hadn't seen chromes this big before. Its appearance was different, too. It was not chrome or silvery. Its chitin and armor and its claws seemed resiny black and brown, as if made from a horny bark that was still growing. It ripped his chest plate. Slaughter got his shield in the way, took off its limb mid-forearm, and then reversed his blade and killed it. Two strokes for one kill. Inefficient. The thing had been big. It had required the extra effort. Another large, dark form appeared, and then two more. What were they? A subspecies? A larger, more aggressive form of the basic chrome xenotype? Slaughter's helm was alive with vox chatter reports from across the offensive, all describing the same new type. Larger, darker, bigger, stronger, harder to kill. Tactical reevaluation. Slaughter started to issue advisories even as he met the next of the new kind. Two strokes to kill one, three to finish the next, more gouges down to bare metal on his armor. Why would any force, any species, keep its largest and strongest warrior forms in reserve? Why would they not send them out into open combat? They might have halted or driven back the Adeptus Astartes attack long before they had cut their way to the blister nest. The tick-tick-tick noise the chromes made with their mouthparts, that malfunctioning data engine clatter, was changing. The bigger, darker warrior forms made a lower, duller noise, a clack, clack, clack. Two brothers in the line had already fallen to their superior power and savagery.
"Do we fall back?" Frenzy voxed. "Slaughter, Do we break and regroup? This is new. This is... Hold the line, Slaughter replied. No regroup, no fall back. Hold the line. Daylight wall stands forever. No wall stands against it. Bring them down. Understood?
Frenzy's unquestioning understood was instantly echoed by 100 voxed voices. Slaughter ducked a slashing brown claw the size of Frenzy's axe head. He was smiling. He had made a realization. He knew what this was. They are us. They are Daylight Wall. The Blister Nest was the Chrome's Palace of Terror. They had kept their bravest and best and mightiest warriors in reserve to defend it, in case an enemy ever got through. This was their last ditch, their last stand. This was their final wall, their do or die. The Imperial Fists were just hours away from completing their undertaking to Adamantua and adding another proud tally to their glory roll. This was the bloody end game, and it would be a battle to relish.
Hold the line,
Slaughter ordered. Then, as a practical afterthought, he added,
Use your bolters.